Dan Fogelman writes stories for the big screen and small that explore the human condition through different perspectives and timelines. Case in point, the hit TV series This Is Us, and now Fogelman's new film, Life Itself. It opens in theaters this week. Dan Fogelman wrote and directed the movie, and we asked him to tell us about how he writes complex stories. First, though, a scene from the film. Actors Oscar Isaac and Olivia Wilde play Will and Abby. They meet in college, marry, and get pregnant, much to the joy of Will's mother, who's played by Jean Smart.
Selfishly speaking, I'm just so glad your parents are dead.
And boom.
Oh, stop it. Abby knows what I mean.
Really? Yeah, she does? You do?
Can I explain?
What I mean is, all I ever wanted was for Will to marry a woman with dead parents so I wouldn't have to share the grandchildren, and he did.
Dan Fogelman, what about that scene we just heard? I wonder if that came out of some therapy session or something, because Jean Smart's character is being incredibly inappropriate, but also truthful and funny. Is this a characteristic, would you say, of your writing and the way your mind works?
Well, I think so. I had a very truthful and funny mother in real life. So that was actually something my mom used to say to me. Yeah. She never was brazen enough to say it to a girlfriend or spouse, but she would say it to me that, Danny, I just hope you just marry a girl whose parents are dead so I don't have to share the grandchildren or the holidays. That was a big deal for my mom.
Little did she know that would work its way into a script sometime.
I know. And ironically, the great irony of the whole thing is my mom passed away. Oh. And I got married subsequently to a woman with great parents who got the last laugh, I guess, on my mom.
Oh, my gosh.
In the saddest of ways. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, that idea of generations and life and death is so much a part of this film. It is the film. And intense feelings. And I want to listen to another scene right now. This is when the first two main characters that we see, Will and Abby, are dating. And Abby expresses some misgivings about being in a relationship with Will. Let's listen to this.
You're the love of my life, I'm sure of it. But sometimes it scares me how much you feel. You know, it's not something I ever thought I would be scared of, but I may not be equipped to be loved this much.
Where did the idea of being equipped to love or handle love come from?
It's something I've always been really interested in, the imbalance that often lives in any relationship, and it doesn't always have to be romantic love interests. I've always been fascinated by how people express love and receive love, and how so often the people who pair up best are people who receive and give in different ways, if that makes any sense. So, yeah, I think it's at the core of who we are in all of our relationships is how we learn to work around each other and love people in the way that they can accept it.
I want to point out that in that scene we just heard, Will and Abby are dressed as John Travolta and Uma Thurman's characters in Pulp Fiction, Quentin Tarantino's film. Another film, as this one does, that really plays with chronology. I wonder, when you have a film like this where things aren't linear in time or in place, and includes individual stories in different times and different places, do you write it that way, or do you kind of do mix and match?
No, I wrote this one straight through.
Straight through the way we see it?
The way you see it.
Wow.
I am not a trained screenwriter, and so when I began writing, I just kind of was self-taught. And I would write in big bursts very quickly. I wrote films in 2 days that got made, but I didn't write very often. And then with this one, I really carefully wrote it over the course of a couple of years and just let the story keep evolving and expanding as I went. And I would often double back and adjust, but it plays in about 5 or 6 different stories. It crosses time and even language. And it really presented itself to me over the course of a longer period of time than I was used to, where I was just writing a bit and I would take a break and I would think about what would come next. And then I would go back to the computer and write some more. I finished it and I said, I think this might actually be something, but I don't quite know how I got from here to there. And that's kind of, hopefully, the experience of watching the film. By the time you've ended your 2 hours in theaters, you're meant to have felt like you went through something. And that was kind of how I felt writing it and finishing it.
You mentioned different languages, in fact, that come up in the film. Let's hear one. It happens to be Spanish. This involves Antonio Banderas, who plays a wealthy landowner who fears that his upbringing has gotten in the way of his achieving happiness.
Tengo muchas cosas increíbles en mi vida, señora González. Pero mi educación tan poco común.
He's saying, I have a great many things in my life, but I fear that my strange upbringing has left me with scars that have kept me from finding the most important things. And he's speaking to the woman he wants to become one of those important things. Hmm. Where did this international angle for you come from?
Yeah, you know, halfway through the film pivots to another continent and pivots to Spanish. It was just something I thought, if I'm going to try and capture a bunch of different feelings and emotions and stories inside of the human experience, it would be nice to not just have it be familiar Americans and to really try and paint from on a wider canvas. And then hoping, you know, that I could put this on screens across the country, and halfway through the movie, it shifts to a 12-minute monologue in Spanish from Antonio Banderas, and waiting to see if the audience is going to go with that or not, an audience who doesn't always go to subtitled film. And it's been a very exciting experience. When you're getting a laugh in Kansas City halfway through a 12-minute monologue in Spanish, a dialogue-based laugh, that's as exciting as it gets for a filmmaker.
When you said a little bit earlier that you want people to come out at the end of the film feeling as though they have been through something, I wonder if some of the ideas here of the unpredictable narrator and life itself being an unpredictable and unreliable narrator, and the idea of life bringing you to your knees, is something that came through as you were writing this, came through from your own life.
It did, yeah, very much so. And I didn't sit down thinking I was writing about anything personal. It was only, frankly, after seeing the movie put together for the first time, where I said, oh, I see psychologically, you know, what I was grabbing at. I was very close with my mom. She died very suddenly and very unexpectedly when I was about 30 years old, about 10 years ago. And it was a body blow that really took me out for quite a while. And almost 1 year to the day after she had passed away, I met my wife, who I would wind up marrying. And I think that's what I was on a personal level really exploring. The strange ups and downs and lefts and rights of life, and the way that if you keep progressing the story and refuse to stop in the dark parts, life is beautiful and romantic and wildly optimistic, even though everything around us is often so dark and cynical right now.
I want you to bring into that theme Bob Dylan, yeah, who plays a key role here.
Dylan plays a huge part in the film. He basically serves as the soundtrack for the entire film, specifically the album Time Out of Mind. When I sat down to write, not knowing where I was going, I often put on music and I put on my iTunes, and that album came up and I started writing. And I continued playing the album over and over again. The song that became possibly most recurrent in the film and thematically recurrent is Make You Feel My Love, which was a song I always liked a lot and has been covered a million times.
I could offer you a warm embrace to make you feel my love.
It's a sweet song.
It's a sweet song. And as I was finishing the film, writing it, I was in a bookstore and there was a book of Dylan criticism standing like as an editor's choice in the bookstore in front of me. And I opened it up to the album. And whoever it was, this critic, was really coming after that song, saying that Dylan had created this perfect, beautiful, bleak, tragic...
perfect in its bleakness.
Perfect in its bleakness album. And then smack in the middle of this, he put this one hit love song, and it's the only wart on the album in this guy's mind. And that was where kind of the film gelled to me thematically, and it frankly speaks to what I've always kind of wanted to chase as I try and write and make stuff, which is... things can be a lot of different things, and just because there's a lot of ugliness in the world, there can still be a really romantic pop song in the middle of a really bleak album. And to me, that song in that album, I would argue that perhaps it was his point, and that becomes a really prevalent theme in the film.
Well, there's a lot there. Writer-director Dan Fogelman, his new film is called Life Itself. So nice to talk to you. Thank you.
You as well. Thank you.